Our next speaker is certainly familiar to many of you. Brian Timoney is a well-known leader in this group. He's been involved with this community since the Victoria 2007 Phosphor G, and was one of the organizers of the fantastic Phosphor G event in Denver, which really, I think, accelerated the development of this community. Brian's been a consultant for over 20 years in the main geo areas that we work in government and energy and telco and defense, and brings that wealth of experience to us to talk to us today. You build on what Vicky is saying and say his talk on you can't get there from here alone. Community and geographic knowledge. So thank you, Brian, for it.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you to the organizers for inviting me. Thank you to you folks for coming out early before the main content begins. And I see folks in the back. I see a Phosphor G. You know, it's a very particular type of community. So we have a very church type seating arrangement where we have plenty of seating available up front. You have folks standing in the back. And, you know, do not fear what's going to emanate from the pulpit for the next half hour. It will enlighten you, even if you don't want to be enlightened. So, instead of more biography, which is not particularly interesting to me, at least, let's start as a geographic conference with a map. A map whose cartographic style could most generously be described as vivid. But of course, we can look at the content. It's a map of the regional dialects or accents of the United States English. So I would direct your attention towards the Eastern Seaboard, and we're gonna get a close-up of the Atlantic Midland region, which roughly stretches in the north from west to east, Reading, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, over to Toms River, Long Branch, New Jersey, down the shore. That's a key linguistic phrase for the Atlantic Midland accent. We do not go to the beach, we go down the shore. And then Baltimore is the southernmost point. I see Bill Dollins up front from Maryland Eastern Shore. They are not part of this accent group. For those of you who are visiting and are not from the Eastern Seaboard, I would offer the tourist tip of should you encounter a very vivid sense of local dialect, do not ask if that's a Jersey accent, do not ask if it's a New York accent, and certainly do not ask if it's a Boston accent. It's the Atlantic Midland accent. Just local tip for being the good tourist. So I come from the northernmost stretch of this accent, and if you find yourself utterly charmed, Cesium is a sponsor, and they're Philadelphia-based, so I'm sure there's people at their booth who can continue the joy of that particular regional accent. I want to begin today by going back 450 years ago to Antwerp. Antwerp, the wealthiest European city at the time. And despite this being Phosphor GNA, North America, we do have a Dutch contingent visiting with us here at the conference, which now they're in the back there, they're raising their fists. So, you know, Dutch pride on display. So, you know, being a good American, a little vague about European geography, I'm like, Antwerp, so not a Dutch city? No. So how should I refer to it? It participated in the Dutch Revolt. I did read that on Wikipedia, but it is in modern day Belgium. And the publication of the first atlas by Abraham Ortelius is kind of what I wanted to focus on, because it's a fascinating work, not only of geographic knowledge standardized and distributed to a broad audience, and because of the wealth of the area, that broad audience included the rising merchant class, so much more widespread than the typical consumers of geographic knowledge, large maps, et cetera, being government and royalty, et cetera. But Ortelius himself wasn't a scientific cartographer per se. Kind of like when you meet folks here, so many of us are quick to say, I'm not a coder. So Ortelius wasn't a scientific cartographer, but he gathered the work together of over 80 cartographers and standardized that work because he was an engraver. And he knew these people either personally or through a network that was maintained by written communication. So for those of you who've read Malcolm Gladwell, Ortelius was both a connector and a maven, people who knows people. And so it really goes back to when we say the first atlas was, you know, created by Abraham Ortelius, it was created by a whole network of cartographers. And a very key point is, unlike the standard of the time, in the atlas itself, he named those cartographers as the sources, where the standard of the time was steal, exploit, keep moving. And for those of you who wonder, is that a problem in the open source community? I would refer to you to recent litigation in the last 5 years where our friends at Goldman Sachs had the habit of taking Python libraries and removing all the licensing information, et cetera, so it could be considered internal IP. You can Google that. I don't want to focus on that per se. So, Ortelius, bringing all this geographic knowledge from Europe. One of those scientific cartographers, contributors, wrote him a letter after he received his copy. And I'm going to read that letter to you. I have examined your teatro and compliment you on the care and elegance with which you have embellished the labors of the authors and the faithfulness with which you have preserved the production of each individual, which is essential in order to bring out the geographic truth, which is so corrupted by map makers. Fighting words. That wasn't part of the letter. The maps published in Italy are especially bad. All right, apparently this person had a bad experience in getting his work thieved. Hence, you deserve great praise for having selected the best descriptions of each region and collected them into one manual, which can be bought at small cost, kept in a small space, and even carried about wherever we please. That you prefer me to other authors, I regard as due to partiality for me, as there are many who have made more learned maps, though perhaps fewer in number than I. Allow me to discuss, or rather gossip, with you thus affectionately. I thank you much for your goodwill and shall always be ready to do what I can for you. Signed, Gerardus Mercator. Yes, friends, Mercator. Those of us, this audience has collectively produced millions and millions and millions of web Mercator tiles. Although, because I too care about Mercator's dedication to the truth and faithfulness of reproduction, the web Mercator projection is not Mercator, nor is it conformal. Sorry. We here care about that degree of accuracy. But elements of this letter just speak so vividly to me. The idea of preserving the work of contributors. Yesterday in one of the sessions, It was being presented that the GEOS library had undergone improvements, performance improvements of 10% in recent releases. And the GEOS library is the really core under the hood geometry manipulation engine that underlies PostGIS QGIS. It powers anything that has to do with vector data representations. And what was great about that presentation was the developer who coded those improvements was in the room and we recognized him by name. So this is not a faceless organization. And the efforts we go to recognize by people by name are part of its strength. And this dates back to Ortelius's inspiration to name his sources. And the interesting thing about it is those sources then grew in number because you wanted to get your name in the best-selling atlas in Europe on the subsequent editions. So that flywheel of recognition benefits all. 450 years ago. So, inspired by our trip to Antwerp, I went on my app, SkyFi app, so I can not only download imagery, but order imagery for future flights. So I zoomed into Antwerp and I was promised a capture between October 26th and November 22nd, 50 centimeters to 1 meter at the low, low price of $175.28. Remember how excited Mercator was about the portability of the Atlas? Think of what he would have said about downloading imagery to his phone. And now I see some folks over there and they're asking, is that analysis ready data? And we don't know, but I'm sure for your $175, it's great. But the idea of these are the days of miracle and wonder in terms of access to geospatial data, it's amazing. So, biographical slide number two. 30 years ago, young, energetic Brian Timoney was a sergeant in the Marine Corps infantry, and unfortunately, he was not of sufficient rank or responsibility to rate a GPS for him and his squad. So my squad, 8 United States Marines, were left with a topo map and a compass in order to navigate terrain for both hostile and friendly. So no access to a GPS in my lifetime, my adult lifetime. Now, what would be the situation today in terms of access to GPS? In 2023, the number of devices that are accessing the different global navigation satellite systems, there are 3 times as many devices accessing location information from satellites as there are people on Earth. And I dare say if we took a survey of this room of number of people with smartphones that have GPS, that tally would be in the upper 90th percentile. So again, days of miracle and wonder for those of us in the location business. And yet, as I survey the audience, imagery that goes straight to your phone, GPS in your phone, Google Maps, I never get lost in downtown Baltimore. It's amazing. As I survey the faces this morning, do I see exultation? Do I see intellectual ecstasy? Do I see, yes, I see boredom. But what I see is moderate creasing of brow, tentative looks of concern, reservations, So let's unpack that a bit. Why, in this golden age of access to all manner of geographic data, are not all of you on your feet cheering loudly? Please don't do that. And I think I have a partial answer, at least. With the prevalence of GPS, and I've been living in Colorado for the last 22 years, so one of my guilty pleasures is reading about people getting lost in the backcountry. Nothing better than reading in the Denver Post from the safety of a Denver cafe about people being very stupid in the Colorado wilderness. So backcountry rescues are up. And so what is our first impulse when technology has these kinds of negative second order effects that were easily predictable in retrospect? Well, if you're Apple, hey, guess what you can do? When the new Apple iPhone 14, I forget which version, a version I don't have, so it will connect an SOS message to a satellite system when you're out of range. So let's solve the problem of technology with more technology. Surely that will work. And I pause with a degree of skepticism. And nothing sums it up better than this. Friends, that we are alive and in the geospatial profession in 2023, it's a beautiful thing when people can get lost out west, text their actual coordinates to their wife in Ohio so she can relay them to the sheriff back in Arizona so her husband can get rescued. Friends, people are getting lost knowing their exact latitude and longitude to at least 5 or 6 decimal places, right? More decimal places are better. We all know that. Precision be damned. Our ancestors believed we were members of a fallen race, and I read Reddit posts like this, and I'm really tempted to agree with them fully. So, people getting lost in the backcountry, emboldened by GPS. But there's an even more insidious phenomena to consider. GPS might be bad for your brain. And, you know, those of us who have cell phones near our heads when we sleep at night, we already know about the microwaves that are affecting our head. But the GPS itself is decreasing our navigation capabilities that have been built up over hundreds of generations of human existence and were the basis for our survival for the vast majority of our existence. And yet, maybe GPS is weakening those skills. So the wayfinding navigation capabilities in our brain are deep inside, located in the hippocampus, which also is responsible for memory. Spatial navigation and memory entwined deep within our human brain. That is something to ponder. Two of the great dystopian novels of the 20th century, Brave New World in 1984. In both books, part of the dystopia was the erasure of memory. And the idea that erasure of memory lets you control the present more effectively when people can't remember the past. A profound idea, a profoundly troubling idea. And now we know through science that our spatial navigation skills are tightly entwined with memory. That's compelling. But let's continue on with the optimism. Because, folks, I don't need to tell you twice. With every new technology, the word democratization comes marching forward. And this is a double exacta of techno-optimism. Democratizing innovation, putting technology to work for inclusive growth. I mean, that phrase just wraps around me like a fleece blanket on a cold winter night, right? Because I can't argue with democratization. I can't argue with inclusive growth. And yet I turn the page in my newspaper, and all this democratization and actual democracy is not doing well in the last 15 years. So we have this language we use with technology that both reassures us, and if you think too hard about it, sounds a little misleading. So all these deep thoughts, all these negative thoughts that come with this proliferation of geographic data at our fingertips. But Brian, I hear you. I mean, the light is right in my eyes, but the vibes are just washing over me. You're like, the dystopia is already here, Brian. We're just suspended in the everlasting present. Like, we've already forgotten the past. You, as keynote speaker, are here to give us memes. Give us pleasurable, mildly entertaining, mildly amusing memes. So I don't want to be that guy who just, like, you know, preaches so stridently that people would rather stand in the back than sit comfortably up front right near me. I don't want to be that guy. So who can we meme? And I said, I know who we can meme. Let's meme the most important entity to the geospatial industry, either commercial or proprietary. Let's meme the United States Department of Defense, shall we? That sounds interesting. All right, here's your meme. 1998, the Naval Academy drops the requirement for celestial navigation. Celestial navigation? I mean, how antiquarian, I don't even know what, like, how does that, sextants, how does that even work? Let's get rid of it. We've already figured that out. We got GPS systems. We got redundant GPS systems. We got military-only GPS systems. We don't need celestial navigation. And friends, in the span of most of our professional lifetimes, guess what happened? 1998 to 2015, a mere 17 years before the U.S. Navy, one of the consumers of our technology, said, that celestial navigation thing, how about just in case all this jamming of GPS signals, all this spoofing of the different GNSS systems around the world, let's just make sure every naval officer could determine their location if the unpleasant reality of technology not working correctly during conflict doesn't quite work out. So now there's a mandatory course in celestial navigation at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, a mere 70 miles east of here. And I'm going to assume that's east. And the roots of celestial navigation encompass the publication in 1767 in England of the Nautical Almanac and Astronomical Ephemeris. For those of you who love language, yes, the word ephemeral, ephemeris. So it's tables. As those of you who read the great book Longitude will remember, during the age of exploration and ships going around the world, etc., latitude is pretty easily determined. it's longitude that's hard to figure out. So what the Nautical Almanac was a book of tables with, for every day, at every latitude, and at every lunar distance, it would have a longitude associated with it. So it's been called the first geospatial API. And again, to show how impoverished we are in modern times, they had an ephemeris, we have an API. Language-wise, I think they win. And I'm here to tell you, as much as I enjoyed mocking the US Naval Academy, we have to give credit where credit is due. Because the Nautical Almanac and Astronomical Ephemeris, as you see, was first published in 1767 and is still published annually today by the US Naval Observatory. Friends, you can go online and get your own Nautical Almanac. You can go online and not be imprisoned by the technology of GPS to know where you are in the world. And for all the things we talk about, I don't look at this as a tedious set of tables. I look at this as a tome of ancient wisdom carried forth into the present day. And in a larger sense, I look at it as a cautionary tale, but one that we can learn from. Because friends, when considering this community, when considering who we are in terms of our geospatial profession, the divisions of, oh, I'm a user of free open source software. I am a coder of free open source software. I think that's too much of a limitation of what brings us together. And given some of the trends that we have discussed today, I would invite you to consider that maybe, just maybe, we are this small remnant defenders, if you will, of a particular type of geographic wisdom. A geographic wisdom, we know the map is not the territory, and we know the coordinates are not the map. We know the abstraction is not the real thing, a philosophical idea that goes back centuries. And now we know that geographical sense, from a physiological perspective, so deeply embedded in the human brain, sitting next to memory, indicates where we've been is who we are. Who we are, our identity, is inextricably tied up with the geography of our lives, even down to how these syllables and accents come out of one's mouth. Thank you very much.